Reading from the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text 34, a chapter entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru mami vaishasi yuktvaivam atmana mat parayana. You repeating? That during this 3 days, Mataji told me 3 days. Yesterday, today, and someone else will do tomorrow. She likes to see things from all angles. I don't make the rules. I just follow them.
Important shlok.
So important that it's repeated twice in Bhagavad Gita. Only shloka repeated twice. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Purport. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Korma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami in his Anubhasya comments on Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter, Adi Lila, verses 41-48. Deha dehi vibhedoyam neshvare vidyate kuchit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because the commentators do not know this science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of misleading people. There are some who are demonic. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. That kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love, that is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have several times explained that his body is not material, but is eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. Understanding Krishna otherwise, from the wrong source, will prove fruitless. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is the Supreme. He should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Lok. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. The 7th and 8th chapters of Bhagavad Gita have explained to pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma. But a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme reward of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who is always engaged in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down, because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme reward of Krishna. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. Om Agyanatam Randasyaganajana Shlakaya Chakshyamalatya Minatas Maya Shugaravedama Mukam Karoti Vachalam Panghum Langkaya Tegarim Yakripatamaham Vade Shigarum Dinatayam. This particular verse, as it is culminating in the chapter entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge, so we see that this, in one sense, Prabhupada in different places describes the essence of Bhagavad Gita also as that man mana bhava mad bhakto, always think of me, become my devotee. So this has this particular importance, so much so that again that it's being emphasized in the 18th chapter in the conclusion, so that it doesn't escape us somehow or other if we've missed it here. What Prabhupada emphasizes, more important than, of course, we're always trying to think of Krishna. Every devotee who comes here is coming as a result of thinking of Krishna. But he's giving that stress on favorable devotional service. Anukulyena, favorable devotional service. And he quotes that. Anyabhilasita sunyam jnanakarmadhyanavritam anukulya. This anukulyena has to be understood correctly. And so what does favorable mean? In this regard, that one is fully surrendered to the spiritual master in Krishna, and his service is not mixed devotional service. So he also seems to indicate that those who are worshippers of the demigods are the most unintelligent, most unfortunate. So what does that mean for us, especially when we're in India, where there are so many opportunities to be diverted by demigod worship? We go to this place, we go to that place, even in some functions. Nowadays, in Vrindavan, when we were here many years ago, there was only Gopishwar. He was there, Mahadev. There was no other. And he is an intimate associate in the pastimes here. He's not viewed in the ordinary sense of demigod worship. And we're not celebrating any specific function, just paying our respects in order to get the mercy of Sri Vrindavan Dham. But nowadays, in all these big functions here in Vrindavan, everything has some Ganesh Puja attached to it. But this was never there previously. This is only when we were here, it was only 30 plus years ago when we built Prabhupada Samadhi. No one would ever even think in Vrindavan of doing any Ganesh Puja. Especially, everyone knows the Govardhan Leela, the pastime of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And there, it's very clear that the worship of the demigods was not sanctioned. Krishna gave very good instructions to Nanda Maharaj that why are we worshiping Indra? He's giving rain even on the ocean where it's not needed, or in the desert where it has no use. So why are we worshiping him? He's indiscriminate. So you could say that about any demigod. Ganesh is... some person is getting wealth, some person is not getting wealth. It doesn't appear to have any logic. But everyone is worshiping Ganesh like lottery. Like lottery. You buy some ticket, you pay some exchange, and this is what it is. It's mercantile. I give you something. The famous story in ISKCON is that Guru Kripa Maharaj was doing Sankirtan in Japan. And he was telling Srila, he said to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, can we worship Ganesh?" Prabhupada said, why do you want to worship Ganesh?" "Just because, you know, it's there was some contamination that, you know, he removes obstacles, material obstacles. He also removes obstacles in the path to devotional life, but no need to independently worship him." The Prabhupada said, "You cannot worship Ganesh," says, "unless you can give $10,000 daily." He was joking, because he knew Guru Kripa wasn't going to offer $10,000 daily. In other words, he was saying no, but in a very indirect way. He said, "No, cannot do it." So devotees know this. They know Krishna's potency. They're not bewildered. But we have to guard carefully against it, because it comes in the guise of cultural customs. You know, someone says, "Oh, it's Durga Puja time." And everyone runs to some Durga Puja. But why? This is not during Prabhupada's time. Prabhupada didn't even let us go to Ras Lila. They have so many Ras Lilas in Vrindavan in this rainy season. In July, August, time of Jula Yatra. So many of these, they have these Lila stands. People set up these pandals. Everybody comes. They have these children actors dressed up as Krishna, and they're doing this Ras Lila. But it is not authorized. It is not in our line. It is not recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada was very disturbed. He says, "Who are these devotees who are going?" He said, "They are not my devotees and not my disciples." So we have to be on guard, not to be subtly contaminated by this cultural identification. We're in Krishna's land. This is transcendental, as Prabhupada clearly indicates. It is not a physical location. And how do we know that? Prabhupada said, "You cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan. You cannot buy a plane ticket to Vrindavan." But why did he say that? Obviously, you can buy a plane ticket to Vrindavan. But you cannot enter into the real Vrindavan. So someone who's thinking that Vrindavan is just some cultural location, some spot on Google Maps, then he is in a very bevildered condition. Or he's thinking, "Oh, there's such a nice culture. Let me accept some of these things, some particular aspect." But for what purpose? Our only service is to give others pure Krishna consciousness, not adulterated. We don't say, "Continue your worship of the demigods and chant Hare Krishna." No, we say, no, just, if they have the correct understanding, they realize that by watering the root of the tree, okay, all the leaves and branches, all the demigods, 33 million demigods, they're all satisfied. One time in the early days, there was nothing here in those days, nothing. You could go from Krishna Balaram Temple to National Highway, and there was one building on the left side. That was it. Everything else was forest. Almost the same. I mean, other buildings as you got close to Vrindavan, that was there. And on Mathura Road also, there was nothing. Jaipur Mandir, that was there. And then they just built one temple called Pagal Baba. Why do they call Pagal Baba? Everybody knows Pagal Baba Mandir? You've seen? It has 10 levels, shaped like one tower. So this one Pugla Bubba used to sit there at that spot, and he would be smoking his beedies and collecting, just like so many other Bubbas. But he was crazy. Prabhupada said also he was crazy. We all knew, everyone knew. But somebody gave him money and wanted to build a temple. So they built a temple, very nice, with a pukkur in front. They have some boats for the deities. It was nice marble. So I wanted to see architectural details. At that time, we were just beginning Prabhupada Samadhi. It's not. And so I went there with my camera also because I wanted to go up on the very top. And I have these slides someplace. They're valuable historically because there was nothing. From there you saw Krishna Balaram. That was the only other building, basically, you could see. Some small residential. But I was surprised that when I went into the temple, there was a basement, half submerged, not fully. There were windows at the top level. And it's completely round, so you could walk around the whole circumference of the building down below there. And they have shelves cut into the wall. And on the shelves, they had all the demigods, as many as would fit. I don't think it was 33 million, but it was, without doubt, 33,000. All these little deities, tiny, 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 just set into the wall on the very bottom. And off to the side, in the basement also, were these beautiful marble Gornatai deities. Somebody had just draped a Harinam chatter over. Not installed, just sitting there in the basement with all this other kachara, all this other trash, and these demigods surrounding. I thought, interesting, but... So I went up to the first level floor. And then I saw what the temple was about. It was they had the Das Avatar. Like that. So, of course, first comes Matya. So, I saw that, then I went up to the next level by stairs, and there's the next avatar, and the next avatar. So I'm thinking, what's at the top? What could be at the top? You know, this must be the highest, because everything is going from what they consider to be the lower realizations up to the higher. So I get to the very top of Pugla Bubba Mandir, and if you've never been there, very interesting. There's a square block of granite, and with the Omkar carved on five sides. Four sides and the top. That's their highest understanding. They don't know Ekale Ishwar Krishna Astabrata, Ete Chang Sakala Pungsam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Everything is there, but they can't put it together. But why? Why is that? Why can't they understand? They're here. They're born here. The culture is here. The science is here. Amoga samoga karmana moga jnana vicheta saha. Because their knowledge is stolen by illusion. They're not in Vrindavan. They're in illusion. This is why you cannot buy a plane ticket here. This is why cultural identification is a bad thing. If I think I'm American, or if I think I'm Indian, if I think I'm Christian or Hindu or Muslim, this is not going to help me. It just, unfortunately, makes it much more difficult for me to surrender. I had the opportunity to speak to a young man the other day who had been exposed to so many different philosophies in the course of his life. And finally, accidentally, in school, he was at Kanpur IIT, he got a Bhagavad Gita. But because it was just one of the many books he had been reading, and even though it made the greatest impression on him, and gave him the most realization, still he couldn't distinguish between what was absolute knowledge and what was relative knowledge. Could not distinguish. So in trying to tell him, not tell but explain to him, and accommodate all of his misconceptions, I could see that this was very difficult because he was filled like, what's the example that they use? That a person who wants to learn, there's a famous music school. And any person who goes there, there are two fee structures. A person who doesn't know anything, they give them an aptitude test, And they give them entrance based on that, and they charge them a certain fee. They have no experience in any musical instrument. Another person comes in and they say, well, I've had so much experience, I've studied for so many years. This, they say, we can accept you, but we have to charge you a much higher fee. Because first we have to unteach you everything that you've learned by mistake. Because it is not the correct way. So this Tadvidi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Seriya, this is why it's important, this submissive oral reception, this ability to approach a spiritual master and inquire submissively and render service. People are questioning, and this young man, the exchange was just, I was happily pointing out that you should read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita again. That's all I could say. Please read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita again, because he was just so confused. He had so many ideas, and he was thinking how he had gone out of his body and into this level of realization and seen the cosmic manifestation. I said, you know, I was going to tell him, well, yeah, a lot of people did that in the 60s through the agency of, you know, mind-altering intoxication, but it didn't help them either. It doesn't help. It's a hindrance. You have all misconceptions. So, bottom line is, I made sure that at least when we left, that he promised that he would read Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And that's, hopefully he'll do that. So there's favorable devotional service. It cannot take, you cannot have these competing things. I have to, we have beautiful temples. But many times you see that many, even in places like Mayapur, this is the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. Do we have any instance, and people try to squeeze out any little thing, oh, Lord Chaitanya, he acknowledged Durga. What does this mean? Does this mean that I spend days? Because Durga Puja in Bengal goes for weeks. Weeks. Because they have so many manifestations. There's this Durga, there's that, this Kali, that Durga. So many different manifestations of Devi. And all it is an excuse to get intoxicated and do all nonsense. But now devotees are following this. Why? Because they think, I am Bengali. This is my culture. So, this is a very unfortunate situation. The temple is supposed to protect us, keep us. And that's, you see how clear it says that one has to be in the association of devotees to stay strong. He has to be with those who are not afraid to tell him the truth. You know, if I'm in the temple, doesn't matter where, and you know, a devotee sees that, where are you going? You know, it's time to take rest. We go, no, I'm just going out for a little while. What do you mean? We're in the Brahmacharya Ashram on 55th Street or Henry Street, and somebody starts walking out the door at 9 o'clock at night. There's at least three people who will stop them and say, well, where are you going? You know, it's not time. It's time to go upstairs and take rest. There's no, you know, if you want to go, then, you know, that's okay. I'll have to tell the town president. And, you know, you'll have to answer to him. You don't have to answer to me, but you'll certainly have to give him an explanation. But people think now, oh, no, it's different times. I'm a little independent. We see devotees going all around here. They're listening to this person, listening to that person. This is not a good example for others, and it's not a good situation for oneself. He should be so strict with himself that he should never be thinking, I need to go someplace else to get knowledge. I need to go here. No. We tell this story often, but it's because Prabhupada made it so clear that when this devotee here was going to the Vrindavan Research Institute, he was saying, it's for my service. It's for my service. He was a Sanskrit editor. He was a Sanskrit artist. This is my service, I'm going there. But he was becoming contaminated, and gradually we were seeing, everyone was seeing. He's not coming to the program, he's not chanting his rounds, and he's just going to the Vrindavan Research Institute all day long, saying I'm, you know, so that we can better edit Srila Prabhupada's books. And then eventually one day he comes and he asks Srila Prabhupada, says, ask Prabhupada, I want your blessings to find another guru. I want your blessings to find another guru. And Prabhupada asked, why? I mean, it was a logical question, why? Because there's no bhajan here. No bhajan. You know, this is, a lot of this contamination comes from, you know, some related sampradayas. Prabhupada used to talk about bhajan anandi and ghosti anandi, to distinguish between different camps in the Gaudiya Math. Bhajananandi and Ghoshtianandi. Ghoshtianandi means preaching. And Bhajananandi means you sit down, you concentrate, you... Yes, everything is there. These are all authorized songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, songs of the great acharyas. And one is listening and he's trying to purify himself and fix his mind on the conclusion that these great acharyas have reached and have put into song. And there's nothing wrong with this. And daily we see that devotees are independently chanting, and there's no harm. But it is not the all in all. It is not the mission of the spiritual master, and I am his servant. I am not on some independent course of study. This is the key. It is not an independent course of study, that I'm just here, I'm in the ashram, but I'm doing my own thing. Don't bother me. You don't know. You're not so advanced yet. This is what they say. So Prabhupada, what did he say to him in response? There's no bhajan. He says, I give you permission to go to hell. Such a strong response. So we have to think about that. There's no greater offense than the mad elephant offense. Offense against the spiritual master, this aparad. It is devastating. And for years, because we lived here for years I used to see him come in to the temple. Very, you know, dressed in karmi clothes, still going to Vrindavan Research Institute. You know, had now by now some authored some books on, you know, so-called scholarly aspects of Vaishnav culture, but he was nothing. You know, the face, there's no life. He had no benefit from his pursuit, his endeavor. You know, sometimes we just say, Hare Krishna, come take prasad. No, I'm busy. So many excuses like that. But very sad. Very sad. So we should be very careful. What we have is very special. But if we don't understand, if we don't, this anukulya, pratikulya, this favorable and unfavorable devotional service, it has to be clear in one's mind. Because if you, otherwise, you know, you get this excuse sometimes, well, I didn't know. I didn't know Peru, that was bad. No, what is that? It's our business to know. We're reading Bhagavad Gita. We're reading Nectar Devotion. It's our business to know what is favorable, what is unfavorable. We hear it from the spiritual master. We hear it from our guide brothers. We hear it day in and day out. There's really no excuse, you know, to have this independent, you know, everyone has minute independence. But that minute independence has to be properly situated at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. That is the definition of surrender. With my minute independence, with all humility at my command, I surrender. I surrender. I've spent enough lives in this material cycle of birth and death. I don't need any more. I don't want any more. This is why if we're fortunate, we come to Vrindavan and do service here, And it's very, Prabhupada was very strong about people coming and doing service. He would give, because if you were living here, when guests came for the Vrindavan Festival and Mayapur Festival, they had 2 weeks, sometimes three. And they were considered off limits to the temple commander. Unless they came and said, Prabhu, can I do some service? Because they're coming to recharge their batteries, they're doing Sankirtan for, you know, 11 months, 11 and a half months out of the year. 11 months. They need to come and just hear and chant. This is the program for the festival, Vrindavan and Mayapur Festival. But anyone staying longer than that, he comes under the watch of the temple commander, whose job it is to engage him. And it's not just little engagement, it's full time, all day long. You know, everyone gets time off. You know, there's time. You can eat less, you can sleep less. Prabhupada's famous advice. There was always time. If you did your service correctly, expertly, Prabhupada gave the definition of expert as someone who can do something quickly and efficiently. You know, so there used to be in the temple when we joined, a big temple, lots of devotees, and the deities are getting 8 offerings a day, so there's always cooking and always pots. And so the joke was the pot washes, our service is never done. Never done. But then we arranged so that there'd be different levels, morning, afternoon, like that, so that you could get a break. And it's very satisfying. And when you do service like that and you sit down and you read Bhagavad Gita, that the mercy of Krishna is manifest due to that practical application. That I'm engaging in such a way, Cheta Darpana Marjanam, Bhava Mahag Devagni Nirvapanam. I'm engaging in cleansing the heart. Naturally, as I read, I'm able to understand that much more than I could even just a week previously or a day previously. Level of realization is constantly increasing, along with my endeavor to please the spiritual master. It is not static. We don't just read these books one time. We don't just listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures one time. We listen to them hundreds of times, and each time we hear something different, some new realization. And if you're not hearing new realization, then you're not advancing in spiritual life. You'll be hearing something and it won't, and you'll be feeling that this is hackneyed. And then you'll become like that devotee and you'll have to go to the Vrindavan Research Institute because you think you're not getting enough here. And that's the problem, is because you're not engaging in service, you're not getting realization, and you think, oh, I have to go someplace else. I have to go listen, only listen to these people talking about Rasalila. I have to listen to them. I have to hear this. I'm more elevated. You guys are just still neophytes. Yes, and we wear this proudly. We are all neophytes. We should always think of ourselves in this condition. As soon as one is thinking that I'm a big person, Prabhupada said, then he's fool number one. He's nothing. He's dog. He's thinking he's guru, but actually he's dog. So we never adopt this false prestige of being something other than das, das, anudas. This is the correct consideration. You know, and then when we meet people on the Prabhupada, there was a letter on Prabhupada's desk, and this is 1971. So devotees are joining. They're just becoming initiated after 6 months or a year. And in the course of their interaction with the public, they're speaking something about Krishna consciousness. They're interacting with reporters or TV stations. And Prabhupada was very happy to see that this person had given a very nice understanding. So this pleases Srila Prabhupada, that we know how to speak about the philosophy, about ISKCON, that the presentation is clear and understandable, not that we're trying to make ourselves something then that we're not and give them some esoteric purport to the 12th canto. You know, we just want to give them the basics. You know, what is Krishna consciousness? Who is Krishna? What do we do? Why do we do it? You know, people have so many simple questions. And if we can answer them according to our realization, authoritatively, with conviction, then we have done our service. We have properly represented Srila Prabhupada. We don't have to be known as or pretend to be some scholar. We just have to be genuine. This is the real key. We have to be genuine. That people who meet you should accept, they should appreciate, they should be able to see that this person is what he says he is, what he appears to be. He's not pretending. We know what Krishna thinks of a pretender. Now, this is a very, low position. That someone looks like a devotee or acts like a devotee for some ulterior motive. So such pretenders in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Hari Nam Chintamani, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur remarks, and he gives, it's a very interesting way he puts it. He uses this term, Dharma Dwaji. Dharma Dwaji. And the first time I read it, I didn't know, the translated definition was not there. But we understand what Dharma means. But Dwaj means flag. And a Dharma Dwaji is one who waves the flag of Dharma. It's like Ati Bhakti Choralakhan. Too much devotion means a thief. So sometimes you have people who are just saying, yes, yes, I'm a devotee. Look how I'm dressed. You know. And in that same chapter, he also elaborates on the term Kali Chela. Now why is Bhaktivinoda Thakur? This is a book meant for devotees. This was not something that was commonly, you know, distributed, this Harinam Chintamani. It's for our, like nectar of instruction, for our internal use, for our purification, for our edification. And basically he's telling us what to look for, what to be careful of, and what not to become. Don't become Kali Chela. Don't simply put on this dress, put on tilak, and then, you know, do all nonsense. This is very bad. And when Prabhupada said that this movement cannot be destroyed from the outside, but only from the inside, this is what he meant. He's not saying it. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is saying it. And where did he hear it from? He heard it from Thakur Bhaktivinoda. So these concepts should be clear. And when you know the concept, then you can identify the enemy. All Kali Chela, all Dharma Dwajis, these are our enemies. Whether it's in me or whether it's in someone else. And it has to be rooted out. Wherever it is found and wherever it is seen. Otherwise, it's like opening the door to Maya and saying, yes, come in. Please come. Take advantage of the situation. We shouldn't be so foolish to think that everything is just... Prabhupada said when in Mayapur that don't think it will be easy. You know, you're fighting a war against Maya. So it will not be easy. You have to concentrate. Just like on a battlefield, you cannot be distracted. You have to face the enemy. You have to be aware of all his tactics. You know, you have to see, what is he doing? Is he trying to surround me? Like in Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata, we see that there are formations. They're called vyuha. And in different formations, one presents one thing externally to fool the opposing force and to draw him in. And then you close him in, you shut the doors, you trap him. And he's surrounded and he cannot get out. So all these tactics are there. But these tactics, they're not different from what Maya does. She comes in very sweetly, very softly. And she says, oh, Prabhu, it's okay. You're a little sick today. You don't have to finish your rounds. You know, you should just take it. You don't have to go to Mangalarti today. You don't have to go anything. You know, nothing. You just have to go to Prasadam. And then you don't have to do your service. So these things are very subtle. How the mind, bandar atmatmanastasya, the mind being the best friend or the worst enemy. You have to know the difference. This is not, you know, yes, we like to talk about, you know, especially Prabhupada's manifest pastimes. You know, here's our, what we see as the perfect person. We know that Krishna is the perfect person. But Srila Prabhupada, as his preeminent representative, was acting perfectly in all times and all circumstances. We never saw that he was acting contrary to the Vedic scriptures, what we would understand as the behavior, the sadachara of a person who has followed this path for some time. No, he was perfect. You know, if anyone has, when you watch these videos, it's so nice. Yadubar and his good wife, we can't thank them enough. How this legacy is preserved. And now again, the new movie will come, Acharya. Hopefully, the whole world will soon know. You know, some people know. You know, people are, you know, years ago, the movie Gandhi came out, and it became very popular. And people could understand. So, to that level, this movie will do the same for Srila Prabhupada. That anyone who sees this, anyone who will get, because he has done it so nicely. And how has he done it so nicely? Because Yadubar was fully surrendered to this service. Fully surrendered. And Krishna gave him all facility. He didn't have to make some excuse to be with Srila Prabhupada. There were devotees, I remember, who used to go out and buy video cameras just so that they could go on the morning walk with Prabhupada so that they could get up close and pretend that they were doing something official, like documenting. But only Yadubar was the official. There was a few others. So many different little endeavors. And of course, there's no loss. You want to get close to Prabhupada, that's there. But for Yadubar, it was nothing. One, I can tell you one interesting story. When the second World of Hare Krishna, this film, 1978, early 1978, Yadubar was still filming. So I was in Mayapur. He said, can you help me? Few days, he had to shoot some footage. So any film production back in those days was a big endeavor. The cameras were not these small little, you know, 4K high definition things. It was a professional 35 millimeter Bolu, they used to call Mickey Mouse, with the twin cans holding the reels. And these are heavy, heavy cameras, not light things. You had to carry them on your shoulder. And most people didn't carry them at all. They were given, they were put in a case and wheeled or in a car or a truck. But to go where he wanted to go, into the, was about a kilometer behind the temple at that time, only rice paddy, nothing else. When you walked out of the Mayapur temple, where if you wanted to go to Bhaktisiddhanta Road, there was just, you actually walked through the rice paddies. And some were wider, because they're all dikes, because they flood them. So you basically are walking on top of the little land berm between the rice paddy. And you had to have good balance. So we wanted to go out along the Jalangi to one village. One devotee who had joined, his family had their residence there. And it was like going back 500 years. You know, you go there, the mud huts, thatched roofs, nice compound, all what they use the mud and mitti, and they mix it up and they make a plaster. Mud, cow dung, and the straw, the busha. So very clean, very cool, under the canopy of the tall trees, all the date palms. And so we're there, and we were left right after Mangalarti to go to get avoid the heat. It's always hot in Mayapur. Even at that time, it was getting warm, March sometime. So when we get to the family, they want to show the hospitality. This is Vedic culture. It's not Bengali culture, it's Vedic culture. So they give us date rus. Date rus is the sap from the date palm that's harvested in the container is left there overnight. They just like a rubber tree, they put a little pipe. They tap it into the side of the date palm, hang the pot, and the date rus seeps out and it's collected early morning, usually before the sun comes up. Right? Because it begins to ferment, just like pure sugar. Once it's out of the tree, it's stored, but then it's either consumed or it's turned into gaur. Everybody knows what gaur is? A date gaur is the best gaur. So they gave us these glasses of date rus, bell metal cups. In those days, there's no stainless steel. Stainless steel is low class. Bell metal, first class. Bell metal is, you know, bronze, brass, all these different nice things. So everybody's drinking, and when I got my glass, I told Yadobar, I said, Yadobar, says, mine is already fermenting. You know, you could tell, you could see it, you know, the bubbles are coming, and you can, you know, I've had date rust before, and living in India, you have to be a little careful. If you fermented date rust was a famous drink that the British used to use called toddy. Everyone's ever heard of hot toddy? They take this date rust palm called toddy and they drink it and you become intoxicated. So I said, what should I do? I'm asking Yadubar, he's my older guy brother, what should I do? He said, well, we don't want to offend the hosts. He said, so you should drink it. I said, okay, so I drank it. And under the canopy in the shade, everything was okay. We did the shoot. Beautiful shoot, Vyasaki, some of the devotees in there chanting. You'll see that scene if you look at the video here. They're sitting in this open village area and Vyasaki's chanting, and that's that scene that we filmed. So we close everything up, we pack up, and I'm carrying the camera. That was my service. I'm carrying the camera. So we come out of the canopy, we start walking back to the temple on the dikes, like that. And as we're walking, I'm starting to feel a little lightheaded. And I'm carrying the big camera, and I could see that it's difficult to walk the straight line. So I told Yadubar, I says, you better take the camera, because, you know, I could end up in the rice paddy. You know, you made me drink so you're going to have to carry the camera. So inevitably, I did slip off a couple of times. And I got back to the temple, and my head was just, everything was going around. I said, oh, this is terrible. I'm in the Dom, and I felt like I just drank a big can of intoxicant. So I tried to sit down in the temple room, and my head was reeling. I said, I'm going up to my room. I just went up to my room, crawled under my mosquito net, and I was there for 24 hours. 24 hours. Because after my head stopped spinning, you get the hangover. I had this tremendous headache. And what to do? What do? You're in the dump. You just suffer. For 24 hours, I just tolerated and then realized, okay, never drink fermented date rust. I mean, that's the lesson. You know, just, but these things happen. So we have to be careful about whatever we do in India. Don't just fall prey to customary things. You know, when it was the same thing with first time in the early days when we went to Dauji. Dauji, old deity. These deities are installed by Krishna's grandson, Vajranab. And Dauji's there, big deity, and beside him, Revati, his wife, his consort. And the prasadam that they have is bhang. Bhang is, they mix for Dauji. Dauji, that's his prasadam. Bhang is made from the marijuana flower, mixed with milk. And they have this stone, and they crush it up. They crush the marijuana, and they mix it with the milk, and then they serve it to the deities, and that's the prasadam. And so when we go there, they're trying to offer it, and says, no. You know, but in the early days, some devotees didn't know, and they would drink, and they would go away completely intoxicated. So they didn't know. And after a couple of years, we realized, yeah, okay, thank you, but no thank you. You take a little drop, you put it on your head, and that's it. So you don't take the prasadam from Dauji. You don't drink it. Krishna can drink anything. Nilakanta, Lord Shiva can drink anything. Lord Balaram can drink anything. Drinks Varuni, he drinks bhang. He can drink anything. But we have to be very careful. We have to observe strictly. Because we're representing Srila Prabhupada. So this is, you know, you can learn these lessons the easy way or the hard way. You know, unfortunately I learned a few the hard way, but I can pass along the benefit of those experiences, that you don't wander off the path, you don't deviate off the path, you know, accidentally, by ignorance. Always stick. In the military we have it's called a buddy system. You never go swimming alone. Why? Because if something happens, you're dead. So you always have a buddy. Keep you out of trouble. It's a very good system. As brahmacharis, we always followed this system. We never went any place alone. Because if you went alone, you're a prime target for Maya. Maya always has her sights. She's always looking to test that vulnerable person. Or you think you're so smart, or you think you're so devotional, or you think you're whatever. Let's see how you handle this. Boom. And before you know it, you know, you're going in a different direction and you think, oh, well, I'll just take a little vacation from Krishna consciousness. I'm not really in Maya. It's just too intense. The temple commander, he's too intense. He's always on my case. I'll just disappear for a little while. I'll come back. Or I'll go to another temple. This is all Maya. Wherever Krishna puts you is the right place. But it's up to you to figure that out. Wherever Krishna puts you is the right place. He doesn't make mistakes. You know, it may seem hard. But what does that mean? What's hard? Is it hard to surrender? Is it hard because I don't like this particular situation for whatever reason? So I need to make an adjustment internally. I need to find within my heart that ability to accept those things which I may have difficulty accepting. And my chanting, my attempts to purify myself by this chanting will enable me to do that. That's why we're chanting. We're not chanting just out of some obligation. This is the key. There's no doubt. And anyone who's chanted for even a little time knows that there's a difference. Prabhupada used to give the example of the electric fan, or any fan. That like karma, you come to Krishna consciousness, so the plug is out, the switch is off. But the fan is still spinning a little bit. And so you may experience some of your reactions, but in a very minimized state. Whereas you would have had your hand cut off, now you get a little cut from cutting Radha Shyama Sundar's vegetables in the kitchen. You just got a little cut. But if you were outside the material world, it would have been your hand or your arm. But the karma was missed. And as the fan slowly winds down, you know, basically those, because this is nice karma. That's what Krishna consciousness is. You're not accumulating any karma. You're not suffering any of the results of your previous reactions. The spiritual master has taken all of that just to allow you to go forward. But if we stop doing these things, we stop chanting, if we stop following the program, it's like plugging that fan right back in again. It starts to wind up. All of a sudden, little things start happening. And then bigger things start happening. And then you're thinking, oh, why are these things happening? I better leave. Yes, it seems like you are forced to leave. And people say that. Oh, what do you mean, forced to leave? Well, I wasn't chanting my rounds, and I wasn't following strictly. So you lose the taste. You lose the taste. Krishna actually withdraws it. So we don't want to be in that position. We want to always keep this taste. Because that will protect us. That will keep us properly situated. And we, by remaining in the association of devotees, others who want to keep that taste and hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna, serve Krishna, go out together and preach about Krishna. This is our life. We don't have any other life. You know, we have, you know, if we're grihasthas, we do our duty. But that is not our life. Even the karmis, they go to work, and when they come home, they don't engage in work. They work, they left it at the office. Now they come home and they're with the family, or they do some other extracurricular activity. They watch TV or they do whatever. But they're not doing their so-called work. But for us, we're simply engaged 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, just to serve Krishna. We don't have any other service. And even when we're home with our families, we're thinking about that service. What can I do better? And Krishna's giving us ideas. Even when we're sleeping, how to do something better, how to increase the service. Oh, that idea just came. I can make this nicer. Or I saw this, it was broken, I can fix this. When we walk around, Krishna is using our eyes to see things. He's using our eyes. But when he shows it to you, you have to do something. If you see it's broken, you have to take the responsibility. You can tell the person, because obviously we know better to do one's own duty than to do another's perfectly, but still, if I'm the temple commander, then it is my duty. And if I'm not the temple commander, then I need to tell the temple commander. But I saw this. In the old days, we always carried a pad. Because you walked around, you saw something, you wrote it down. Needs to be fixed. So this is broken. This glass is broken. This doorknob is broken. It becomes part of their list. Then you prioritize. So whether it's the list of something broken externally or something broken internally, the list has to be there. What do I need to do? What do I need to fix? What do I need to repair? Either within me. And we're not fault finders. Prabhupada said, Fault finding means finding fault where there is none. You have to remember that. Fault finding means finding fault where there is none. It's not that, you know, I see some fault, but I don't say anything. No, if the fault is there, then you must say something. Of course, you practice on yourself first. But at the same time, you don't ignore it. It's just like, otherwise, you know, you see somebody walking off the edge of a cliff. You don't just say, have a nice fall. No, you go, you grab him, and you stop him, and you pull him back. He says, what are you thinking? You're about to walk off the cliff. You know, so that precipice, that abyss of Maya, it's there. And if you see your guy, brother, God, sister, walking towards that precipice, that cliff, you want to stop them before they get to the edge. Otherwise, you could have done something, you didn't, and now they're lost. Just for a 5-minute conversation, you could have said, Prabhu, even if I don't, maybe we should go talk to the temple president or someone, you know, your Guru Maharaj, whoever. In those days, it was, you know, temple president was our representative, temple commander, temple president. We didn't bother Prabhupada with small things. He said in the letter, he says, you can certainly write to me. He says, you can, if you have questions, you ask the temple president, you ask your God brothers, God sisters. But certainly, if there's something, feel free to contact me. That's customer service. Feel free to contact me. If you must. That's what Prabhupada said. If you must. So he's always there for us. We never feel separate. And we're very happy to be his servant, his menial servant. We don't need anything else. Everything else he gives by his grace, or we don't get it. In the military, there's a joke that if you were supposed to have a wife, the government would have issued you one. Because the government always issues, you get everything, your clothes, everything issued by the government. It's called GI, government issue. So there's always someone watching that, you know, some young boy who comes, joins the military, he goes and he's thinking, oh, I should get married. And then, you know, he hears, that's the first thing he hears, that if you were supposed to have a wife, the government would have issued you one. Don't complicate your life unnecessarily. Prabhupada said, if you're going to get married, you must be willing to do more devotional service. You must do more devotional service, not less, more. So that's there. You can become grihastha. You must be willing to do more, not less. So that's the challenge. Not just, I'll become grihastha, I'll get a nice place, I'll live very comfortably. No, this is a misconception. That was not Srila Prabhupada's program. So we should all know that clearly. And I was late, so I should stop now and ask for questions before. We have to go to the program. Already the RT started. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, you said Maya is looking an opportunity that how she should enter. Just, I give an example, just like Prabhupada said, you shouldn't be always alone, you should be with somebody else. Always 2% together.
Buddy system.
Yeah. But nowadays we see we are alone and this Maya is attacking. So it is a fault of myself or somebody else's fault?
Well, it depends. When we were young, we had automatically a very close relationship as brahmacharis. We all lived in the same quarters. We didn't have separate accommodations. Those who were a little bit more advanced, they might have slept 4 to a room. We slept 20 or 30. And so we had very intimate. There was no room for this animosity. Krishna very quickly took it away. If I think I'm better than this person or I'm smarter than this person, we're all exactly the same, doing the same service for Prabhupada, hopefully in the same mood. And so friends wasn't difficult. We had so many friends which I still have. Now many of them are dying, unfortunately.